We are now going to demonstrate the rule of perfection which science furnishes us, and thereby truly experience the reward of further inspiration and further illumination as regards our immortality. Let us assume that I am placing all of you on the witness stand. I am asking each of you to testify only in accord with the absolute truth about yourself. Your testimony must be the very testimony of God Himself would have concerning you. May I remind you, before you start testifying, that only insofar as you state the absolute truth are you practicing Christian Science. May I also remind you that in stating the scientific facts about yourself, you are being obedient to our leader's command. And may I finally remind you that in so testifying, you are bringing immortality to light in your experience. Here's a series of questions. Have some of you felt a little self-conscious, a little guilty, a little hypocritical in claiming such perfection for yourself? Don't back down from your argument for perfection one iota. Remember, you are not approaching perfection. You are not this side of it, but you are at that point now. Again, Mrs. Eddy emphasizes that we must take a radical stand for perfection when she says, quote, "Unless you fully perceive that you are the child of God, hence perfect, you have no principle to demonstrate, and no rule for its demonstration." Close quote. Realizing that we are not dishonest in so testifying, that we are not hypocritical, for we are telling the truth about God's immortal man, and we dare not testify in any other way, let us proceed with further questions. Have you noticed that in answering your questions, your answers have to be absolute, without compromise, without qualifications? Have you ever heard of this type of testimony? Oh, yes, I am really perfect, but I don't seem to be. Yes, I am one of the best Christian scientists in the universe, but I don't always demonstrate it. Yes, I know I am really perfect, but I've got to prove it. Of course, I am the immortal child of God, hence perfect, but I surely wish I felt like it. I am one of the most honest men in the universe, but everyone doesn't think that way about me. My family is perfect, but we live in a terrible neighborhood. I am perfect, but some of those church members, and so on and so on. Do you realize that every time the word "but" is attached to a statement of truth, there follows a compromising statement that is not truth? And what happens to our demonstration of perfection when we say, quote, "Yes, I am God's perfect child, but I wish I'd looked like it," close quote? Aren't we actually closing the door on the manifestation of perfection? In my own efforts to stand steadfast in arguing only from the point of perfection, I have found great help in a journal editorial. When this article was published, it was so well received that when I sought to find an extra copy, I wrote to Boston for another copy, and there was none to be had. Evidently, I wasn't the only one who appreciated the positive, absolute approach which this editorial presented. The title of it is "Accepting Demonstration." It was written by Margaret Morrison and appeared in the Christian Science Journal of February 1947. Miss Morrison brings out in this editorial that real demonstration is spiritual, mental. In fact, the very testimony that we have been giving here this afternoon is the true demonstration. Any manifestation that might take place in our human experience as a result of this demonstration of truth is but an added thing. In other words, rejoicing in perfect God, perfect universe, and perfect man is the demonstration. The right job coming our way, the physical problem healed, the finding of a home, the manifestation of supply, are but the added things. I like the way she emphasizes that if we testify consistently as regards what is actually true, we leave the door wide open for the added things. However, if we attach to our demonstration of truth the word but, and add a negative thought, we close the door on the added things. Of course, the added things are pleasant in our experience. Why not leave the door wide open so that these added things can flow into our everyday living in abundance by steadfastly testifying only to truth without any compromising ifs or buts or maybe-sos? Another way to be a door closer on the added things is to look for evidence in matter. One who testifies that God is the health of his countenance, and that he lifts up his face without spot, that he is the perfect reflection of the perfect God, and then turns to the mirror to see whether the truth has healed that facial blemish, is certainly not keeping a single eye on spirit. Rather, he is being double-minded. He is trying to use spirit to heal matter, and he is looking at matter to see if it is healed. One who is arguing consistently from the point of perfection will claim all these wonderful, glorious spiritual truths about himself, and then face the reality about himself and see that they are actually the truth now. That now he lifts up his face without spot. Now is he the perfect, pure, holy image and likeness of God. There is no place else for him to turn to find out what is his condition. There is no matter in which there can be a manifestation. There is no mortal mind to report a condition. There is no material sense to testify as to man's appearance. Let us rejoice here and now that we are not approaching perfection, but are at that point. A wonderful example of one who claimed perfection and kept a single eye on spiritual evidence was given as a testimony in the Sentinel a few years ago. A woman was in an automobile accident. The car in which she was riding was hit so forcefully that she was thrown to the pavement, then was run over by a truck. When she was picked up, it was said that she would never walk again. But she walked within a week. Was the fact she walked so soon the demonstration? Indeed not. The walking was the added thing. The demonstration is found in a statement she made. Quote, "Healing isn't changing anything. It is simply facing reality." Close quote. Thus, instead of accepting a broken physical body, trying to use science to heal it, and then watching the results in that physical body, she argued, claimed, rejoiced consistently for the truth. She argued only on the side of perfection, never accepting the belief of accident or broken body. There was no room for ifs or buts in her testimony. Moreover, she kept a single eye on the evidence that God gave that she was his perfect image and likeness. Because the door was kept so wide open by constant argument only from the point of perfection, how could our friend help but walk? A young lady from an eastern state wrote to me asking for help in regard to work. Nothing was right about her present position. The place she was working was excessively hot and dirty. The people employed there were bad-tempered and uncooperative. The hours were long and the pay meager. The organization was located in a section of town through which she feared to pass. Her employer was uncouth in manner and language. In my letter of reply, I reversed every error and told her the spiritual truth about herself. I pointed out that God was her only employer, and asked her to rejoice in his perfection, majesty, dignity, fairness, and justice. Because she lived and moved and had her being in God, it was impossible for her ever to find herself in an unlovely or dangerous spot. Dwelling in the atmosphere of soul, her surroundings could not be hot or unlovely, but always beautiful and harmonious. Moreover, she wasn't working with difficult mortals, but with cooperative, lovable, immortal children of God. Also, God rewards his children in unrestricted measure for the work we do for him. But when she wrote to me again, she was telling me how nothing had improved, and how terrible her job was from every point of view. Back and forth went the correspondence. My letters kept testifying from the point of perfection, whereas hers gave only the unreliable, lying report of the testimony of material sense. Finally, she wrote saying she wished we would make our demonstration. I replied that I had already made my demonstration. I knew who she was, where she worked, who her employer was, with whom she worked, what her work record was, and so on. I asked her if she wouldn't write me the kind of letter I had been writing her, in which she would keep a single eye on the spiritual truth about herself and tell me only that to which God testifies. When her letter came, it was not the type I had requested. She said the job had been so terrible, she had quit. She just couldn't write the letter that I wanted with things as awful as they were. But someday, just because I had been so patient and loving with her, she would write the letter. In about a week's time, here it came, 13 pages long, written on both sides of the paper. She said that when she had started to write the truth about herself, the words flowed. She was thrilled with the results. Truly, the letter was beautiful and completely accurate in expressing a scientific sense of employment. She had certainly kept a single eye on spirit and had testified only from the point of perfection in composing the letter. 2 days later, I received another letter in which she announced finding a perfectly wonderful job in a most unexpected manner. Everything about the new position was in accord with the testimony she had given concerning her true employment. Was the new employment the demonstration in the case? Absolutely not. It was merely the added thing which must necessarily follow when one is really demonstrating in consciousness the truth about the situation. The letter, full of scientific sense of employment, full of testimony from the point of perfection, was the real demonstration. In my own testimony from the point of perfection, I like to do a little extra opening of doors for the added things, by supporting my statement of perfection with such arguments as, quote, I know it, I understand it, I accept it, I am grateful for it, I am thrilled with it, I am demonstrating it, I am satisfied with it, and everyone sees the perfect demonstration, exclamation mark, period, full stop, close quote. This kind of testimony doesn't leave any opportunity for the negative buts or ifs to introduce any compromising statements. Before we leave this text, I would love to point out to you what an excellent teacher was our leader, Mrs. Eddy. In this one little paragraph, she has told us just exactly how to practice Christian Science when she gives us an opportunity to use the truth by presenting us with a problem to solve. Following her directions, we find this statement, quote, "By this, I do not mean that mortals are the children of God. Far from it." Close quote. Isn't that a challenge? What are you going to do with a statement like that? Are you going to slump back in your chair and say, "Oh, well, I'm just a mortal, so this does not apply to me"? You can't do that, for Mrs. Eddy has already told you that you must claim that you are immortal. Then, are you going to agree that you are immortal? But probably some of your neighbors, some of your friends, or some of the individuals in your business organization are mortals. Certainly you can't do that, or you would not be arguing from the point of immortality and perfection. Nowhere in your universe can there be any imperfection ever. How wonderful it is that we can so rapidly come to the conclusion that because God is the only creator, there is no such thing as a mortal. Certainly we agree that Mrs. Eddy never meant that a mortal, material, lying story about man is the child of God. But how grateful we are that we know and understand that there can't be a lying material story about man, for there is no mortal to tell it. We know that this is the conclusion Mrs. Eddy would have had us come to. For in the concluding statement of the paragraph she says, quote, "In practicing Christian Science, you must state its principle correctly, or you forfeit your ability to demonstrate it." Close quote. Certainly no promise was ever correct that included in it even a belief of mortality. Remember that when I contrasted my own human experience with that of the Hindus, Mr. Dunn pointed out that both experiences were nothing but dreams. We often hear mortality referred to as a dream. Many Christian Scientists really agree that they are truly immortal children of God right now, but there's that negative but again. But they are having a dream of life in matter. They agree that they will awaken someday to the nothingness, the unreality of the dream, and they will enjoy true spirituality, true immortality. Most of them plan to awaken after they pass on. Isn't it ridiculous to go on dreaming? Isn't it foolish to postpone awakening from a dream? To knowingly postpone the awakening to the dream will even include passing on. I know all of you love, as I do, the beautiful hymn found in our Christian Science hymnal, "O dreamer, leave thy dreams for joyful waking. O captive, rise and sing, for thou art free. The Christ is here, all dreams of error breaking, unloosing bonds of all captivity." The promise of healing and freedom are inspirational. But in addition to the beauty and inspiration of this lovely hymn, there is included a specific command for each and every one of us. Leave thy dreams for joyful waking. It does not suggest that we postpone the leaving of the dreams and the awakening. Rather, it points out that the Christ is here now, breaking the dreams of error now, and unloosing the bonds of captivity now.